I got a fever, and the only prescription is more Patrick Madrid. Come on.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Sad story to report to you. Kind of a weird story, too. This took place in Michigan. Gregory Jarvis, 57 years old. He won a $45,000 lottery game prize, but he drowned with the ticket in his wallet before he was able to cash it. It's just a strange, sad story. They said he was a very nice guy. He would come into the Blue Water Inn in Caseville, Michigan. That's where he played club keno, and he hit the jackpot. And his lottery game prize was $45,000, but he couldn't redeem it. He couldn't cash it because he didn't have a valid Social Security card. So the night that he won the money, he bought drinks all around for the house, or on the house. No, on him, I should say. But he couldn't cash the lottery game ticket because he needed a valid Social Security card. So he reapplied for a Social Security card. And then after a few days, he didn't show up, and they thought maybe he was out working somewhere. But eventually, his body had been found in, I guess it was a lake near a boat. And it looks as though when they did the autopsy that he fell out of his boat, hit his head, and drowned. Very sad. May he rest in peace. So he was waiting to get his Social Security card when this happened. So they've given that money to his relatives. And that's the whole story. It's just, I guess it just goes to show that you always need to be ready. Always be prepared to meet Jesus and have your exit interview. And I have no earthly idea what his life was like in that regard. But when I saw the headline, it reminded me once again about how unpredictable life can be. So maybe the takeaway for you on that one is, if it's been a long time since you've been to confession, go to confession. You know, get right with God. And if you find yourself falling into sin, serious sin, get back out of it. Because you never know. You're riding high one day with $45,000 in your pocket, almost. At least you've got the the certificate that will give you that money. The next thing you know, you may be having your exit interview. So something to think about. Let's go to Rose now in Chula Vista, California. Hi, Rose.
Hi, Patrick. I have a question.
Okay.
This was texted to me yesterday by my daughter. She said, is it true if someone was cremated before the funeral, the church, the Catholic Church, will not allow a Catholic Mass?
I don't think that's true. I don't know with certitude. I'd have to check the U.S. Bishop's website. You could check that too. It's usccb.org. But I don't believe that's true.
Oh, okay. Because I told her, after I came up with a few suggestions, I finally told her, I'm going to call Patrick Madrid. And I want you to listen to his program tomorrow. So I'm getting her to listen to Relevant Radio because you have a lot of knowledge. And she comes up with some questions, and I don't have all the answers.
Mm-hmm.
So if I go to the CCCB,
yeah. So it's
website.
US. I'll tell you the URL. It's usccb.org.
Okay.
That stands for U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. So usccb.org, and there's a search bar near the top. If you just type in cremation or Mass of Christian Burial, you'll pull up whatever articles that they have on those topics. That's typically how I research it if I don't know the answer to that. But my sense is, and I'm more than willing to be corrected if I'm mistaken on this, but my sense is that in a situation where cremation was necessary or it just happened before the Mass was able to be celebrated, the church would not say no. I'm thinking, for example, let's say that there was an outbreak of cholera or some other devastating plague, and it was for sanitary purposes, it was necessary to cremate bodies. Well, the church is not going to say, well, I'm sorry, there's no Mass of Christian Burial for the repose of the soul because the cremation took place before the funeral. So again, I don't think I'm wrong on this, but it's always good to check on the bishop's website. Okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I told her to call the parish priest, and he might probably send her to the same place.
Perhaps so. Yeah, perhaps so.
Okay.
I don't advocate cremation, by the way. I know it's becoming very popular, but for me, and I'm just sharing my own opinion, because keep in mind the church does permit it now. It didn't used to, but the church does permit cremation now. But I'm opposed to it primarily on the grounds of I recoil at the thought of destroying the body with fire. So to destroy the body, which is what cremation does, to me it just seems inconsistent with the body being the temple of the Holy Spirit for a baptized person. So on those grounds, I myself do not recommend cremation, but I have no say in the matter because the church permits it. So people are free to do as they wish on that particular point.
Is there anything, would the website also tell us about keeping the ashes and not having them buried?
Yes. In fact, that I can tell you because I've quoted it from the U.S. Bishop's website before. The church does not permit that you can keep the remains, so that say the ashes, in an urn in your home. You're not supposed to scatter the ashes anywhere. Rather, the church says that they should be interred either in a columbarium, which is a place for urns, a columbarium will be found in a Catholic cemetery, or in some sort of a cemetery setting, a crypt, a mausoleum, and preferably Catholic, so that people can pay their respects and show the proper care for the remains of what once was the temple of the Holy Spirit. And that is specified in detail on the bishop's website. Hope that's helpful to you, Rose. Thank you. Let's go now to Teresa in Illinois. Good morning, Teresa.
Hi, Patrick. I have a question. I was just told, I'm in the state of Illinois, and I was just told on Monday that I had to bring in either proof of a negative COVID test or a vaccination card in order to continue coaching my kids. This is in a grade school, middle school. And everyone else has to abide by that too. Also, in order to volunteer or substitute teacher, anything, this is what you have to do. And our family had COVID. We, very healthy, active family. We got through it fine. And just worried about, we've obviously researched everything in depth, seeing the side effects of the vaccine and the VAERS website and everything. Anyway, we've done a ton of research. And at this point, with no one liable for side effects from this vaccine, and among many other reasons, we've decided to hold off for now to get the vaccine. It's still, most of the vaccines are still experimental. So my question is, as we come closer and closer to President Biden's 98%, which he announced yesterday, he wants the country to be 98% vaccinated. And also from listening to a program on Relevant Radio yesterday, a bishop had said that, you know, the church is pro-vaccine. He made it very clear when he had a caller in from New York City that was upset that she didn't have any backup for not getting the vaccine from the church. So I guess my question is, because our diocese is, you know, not allowing us to get, I guess what's going to happen, I think, is they're going to make us pay for these tests, these negative COVID tests weekly. Eventually, I believe that's not going to be a free, because they ask you if you, you know, why you're getting the COVID test, and you have to pay if you haven't been exposed. So
you were just about to ask me a question. What was that question?
Yeah. So my question is, when this gets so intense, you know, are we, because I have a Christian school here, I just feel terrible to take my kids out of the Catholic school, but I feel like eventually we are going to be mandated to show a vaccine card, period.
Right. So what's the question, Teresa? I know that you're spiraling in toward the target.
What do you think? What is your opinion on this? You always have opinions on what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
So you predicted that this vaccine was going to be mandated. I listened to it 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. So what's your prediction now?
Okay. Well, based upon what I'm seeing, and I monitor this every day, so I'm seeing it progress daily, it is becoming more and more difficult to not get the vaccine. And I know there are people who have sincere, very strong reasons why they don't want to get the vaccine. And there are a variety of different reasons. It's not all one thing. But I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that the more this goes, the more onerous it's going to be for people to live a normal life. We're already seeing this in Australia, for example. I quoted earlier from the news in Sydney, Australia, that effectively the equivalent of the governor of that state has said, we're going to make life really, really miserable for you. And there'll be a whole lot of things you're not going to be able to do. Now, they're being very overt about it. I think something similar is likely to happen here in the United States, to the point where if you choose not to get the vaccine, then you won't be able to fly on a commercial airliner. You will not be able to go on a cruise. You will not be able to go to a restaurant or a grocery store or to your children's recital at school. Here you're being told that you're not allowed to, I think you said, coach kids or whatever the activity was that you mentioned. It's just slipping my mind. And more of these things will be closed off for people who don't have the vaccine. I think things are going in that direction and will probably be full tilt in that way sooner rather than later. So perhaps by, Easter, all those doors may be closed for people. The airlines are already talking about this openly, about trying to jointly and with the government and the FAA, I guess, to have a policy where if you're not vaccinated, you don't get to fly. So my sense is that's where things are heading. Now, what do you do about it? If you don't want to get the vaccine, there are some bishops who would strongly disagree with you and say you have to get the vaccine. There are other bishops. I'm thinking of the bishops of Colorado, for example, who recently came out with a statement jointly saying you have a right to not get the vaccine and you have the right to not be coerced into doing something, especially that involves medicine in your body, if you don't want to do it. And I think those bishops are right. I think that they are correct and they're accurately explaining what the church teaches on this issue. But one of the complicating factors, quite frankly, Teresa, is that you've got bishops who are saying exactly the opposite of that. So that's what makes it more difficult. You could cross the boundary from one diocese into another, and you're going to have a very different message if you go there. So I grant that that complicates matters. But in any case, if you're asking for my opinion is that you do have that right to do this. Now, I've had people, including some people I have always counted as friends, who have sort of jumped on me because they think that I'm caving in or I'm, what's the term I heard somebody use? I forget what it was. I'm compromising in some way in their view by saying what the church has said, and that is that you can get this vaccine. You can get the vaccine. In fact, I had one person that was really angry with me because on this program, there was a caller who I think, as I recall, he was in danger of losing his job, his livelihood, if he didn't get the vaccine. And I said, well, in this case, if I were you, I'd get the vaccine. And it just infuriated some people who absolutely under no circumstances will get the vaccine. I can respect that. I do respect that. That's their view. But many of them are so antagonized that they believe basically that you, if you get the vaccine, that you have compromised your faith or you have turned your back on Christ or any of these other things that are not true. But we've gotten to the point now where people are so polarized and so antagonized and so dug in to their position, whether for or against the vaccine. And as I mentioned, I even have a friend who will correct me if I even use the term vaccine, because he doesn't even like to hear that word used. So in any case, all the above being the case, my advice to you would be if you want to lead a relatively normal life and be able to do the things that you're accustomed to doing, like going to the grocery store or getting on a plane to go visit grandma or something like that, you're going to almost certainly need to get the vaccine. And there's nothing immoral about taking the vaccine. You're not betraying Jesus. You're not doing anything sinful or immoral. The church has been very clear about that. and all the arguments to the contrary notwithstanding. If you, for your own personal reasons, do not want to get the vaccine, I do believe you have the right to refuse to get the vaccine, no matter how much bullying people may subject you to. I believe that you have that right. But my thought is, to go back to your original question, you and whoever else doesn't want to get the vaccine is going to be, you're going to be living a very different kind of life in the not too distant future, because they're going to make it as difficult as possible. It's a form of coercion, and they're going to use that coercion to force people to just say, all right, I give, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to get the vaccine. I think that's the way things are headed. Does that give you the answer that you were, maybe it's not the answer you were looking for, but does that answer your question?
No, it does. It does. I think I have to move out of the state. I honestly, unfortunately, and it has nothing to do with the moral issues. I just don't believe, I believe we're at less risk with our antibodies, you know, to take the vaccine than the side effects that I'm seeing from the vaccine. And it's very logical. It's researched. We've done so much research, my husband and I, and we are just floored that they won't even take an antibody results test from our.
Right. I've talked about this many times on the program. I think most recently, as recently as maybe Tuesday of this week, pointing out yet again that there are these new large scale studies. In the case of the Israeli study, it was nearly 800,000 people who were studied, and it shows that I think the figure was 27 times the comparison between those who have the natural antibodies from having had COVID. Their natural immunity made them 27 times less likely to get COVID than somebody who had been vaccinated. And these are now established, bona fide, mainstream scientific findings that you can't, not you personally, but that they can't ignore, they can't argue it away, they can't dismiss it, because there's more and more of it. So I think one possible permutation of the situation is that it may be grudgingly accepted by the establishment to say, all right, well, if you've had COVID and you have the antibodies, and we don't know how long they'll last, that's the mantra, we don't know how long they're going to last, but we know that it's more robust and it's a safer situation for somebody who has had them or who has had COVID. And maybe there will be an option there. Maybe there'll be a loophole there. It's not there yet, and maybe it won't come, but that's another possibility. So time will tell.
And if they would, someone would put some money down, you know, someone be liable for the side effects of the vaccine if indeed that does happen. You know, nobody, I have a friend who's very upset about us, talk about division. And I said, well, why don't you put your house on it then? Why don't you put, you know, your assets on this?
And we'll. What do you mean put it on this? I'm not sure what you're saying there.
Meaning you're liable for the side effects that we get from the vaccine.
Oh, I see.
Because no one else is.
Well, let me share with you, and I'll have to leave it at this because I have a break. I have in front of me an abstract from the Supreme Court of the United States, Bruskowitz et al. Versus Waith LLC, FKA Waith Inc. et al. This is the certiorari to the United States Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit. Now, this is dated October the 12th, 2010. It was decided on February 22nd, 2011. I'll just read you this one paragraph, which speaks to the point you're making. The National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act of 1986 created a no-fault compensation program to stabilize a vaccine market adversely affected by an increase in vaccine-related tort litigation, and to facilitate compensation to claimants who found pursuing legitimate vaccine-inflicted injuries too costly and difficult. The Act provided that a party alleging a vaccine-related injury may file a petition for compensation in the Court of Federal Claims, naming the Health and Human Services Secretary as the respondent, that the court must resolve the case by a specific deadline, and that the claimant can then decide whether to accept the court's judgment or reject it and seek tort relief from the vaccine manufacturer. Awards are paid out of a fund created by an excise tax on each vaccine dose. As a quid pro quo, manufacturers enjoy significant tort liability protections. So this is the key to the whole thing here. Most importantly, the Act eliminates manufacturer liability for a vaccine's unavoidable adverse side effects. So there is immense protection for the pharmaceutical companies from this sort of thing. And there is in place at least this Court of Federal Claims where you can bring a suit if there's an injury. But I'm guessing, based upon what I've seen, that it's probably not nearly as satisfying financially to do that as opposed to suing Pfizer or one of the other pharmaceutical companies. But they're, in essence, as I read this, if I'm understanding it correctly, they're in essence immune, if you'll excuse the pun, from lawsuits based upon vaccine injuries. I'll have to leave it at that, Teresa. Thank you. I'll be back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and RelevantRadio.com.
Cyrus, I'll bet with a very high degree of accuracy that I can guess how many times you checked your smartphone yesterday.
Uh-oh.
Want to take me up on it?
No, that makes me nervous.
Well, if you're like most Americans...
I was just checking it when you said that.
Yeah. Well, you're proving the point of this article then. This is from Fox 5 New York. New research shows the U.S. is deep into the digital age and data showing Americans check their phones 96 times a day.
Whew.
Yeah. It sounds terrible when you put it that way, right? That's once every 10 minutes, according to global tech care company Asurion. The company also said it's a 20% increase from a similar survey that they did 2 years ago. Asurion says that 50% of Americans are attempting to use their phones less. The company's data also showed 18 to 24-year-olds check their phones twice as much as the national average, and that age group is aware of their heavy phone usage. So they're aware of it, but they do it anyway. Other key findings from the survey include that staying connected with family and friends is the number one reason people use their phones. Texting is now common among all age groups, with baby boomers being 7 times more likely to text than to talk in person and twice as likely to send a text rather than dial a phone number. I think I'm guilty as charged. I do that. I find texting so much more convenient because I'm not going to interrupt whatever the person is doing. They can read the text when they get to it. I think I in a way prefer getting texts to getting phone calls now, honestly.
You ever text somebody that's in your house? They're just,
yes.
You know, I have too. Guilty.
Yeah. It sounds ludicrous though, doesn't it?
It does. Oh yeah. It's silly.
The survey showed nearly nine out of 10 Americans are offended when someone they're speaking with starts looking at their phone. Ironically, 75% of survey takers admit that they've done it themselves. And nearly 1 in 5 say they do it frequently. What? What was that? Funky facts. Funky facts. Okay.
Yeah, you're giving us some funky facts.
Yeah, that's from the 70s, I guess. Researchers show that smartphone use triggers dopamine, the neurotransmitter responsible for the brain's reward and pleasure zones, the same chemical released while eating and some studies show while playing video games. The neurotransmitter has been tied to addiction, but knowing whether you have developed an unhealthy dependence on your smartphone depends on you and your loved one's feelings. So,
yes, that's true.
And the show just wouldn't be the same if I didn't share this story quickly before we go to the phones. You'll love this one, Cyrus. It's a sad story. I'm sorry to say so, but a man in northeastern Illinois died from rabies. He got rabies because he woke up. He was asleep in his room and he woke up and there was a bat on his neck.
Oh.
What's this bat doing on my neck? He probably said when he jumped out of bed. And indeed, he had been bitten by the bat and the bat tested positive for rabies. And the man died of rabies because, not because he necessarily had to die of it, but because he refused treatment. So about a month after being bitten by the bat, he started suffering from neck pain, headache, numbness in his fingers, difficulty controlling his arms, and trouble speaking. They confirmed that the man died, they being the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, confirmed that he died of rabies. One of the physicians at the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, says rabies has the highest mortality rate of any disease. I did not know that. Rabies has the highest mortality rate of any disease. However, there is life-saving treatment for people who quickly seek care after being exposed to animals with rabies. The rabies virus is transmitted through direct contact with an infected animal, including through the saliva or brain or the nervous system tissue. The rabies virus attacks the central nervous system, causing a brain disease that can lead to death without treatment. Human rabies infections are rare in the U.S., with 1 to 3 cases reported each year. Still, an estimated 60,000 Americans receive the post-exposure vaccination series each year. Illinois public health officials caution that even though people are usually aware that they have been bitten by a bat because they have very small teeth, the bite mark may not be easy to see. I'm still thinking about the guy waking up with a bat attached to his neck. That's the part that really gets me about this. Poor man. The state health department advises people who come in close contact to a bat should not release it until it can be tested for rabies. People are also encouraged to contact local health officials to find out whether or not they have been exposed to rabies. A 2019 CDC report found that bats are the cause of 7 out of 10 cases of rabies in the United States. You used to think about rabid dogs, and they have a stat on that too. They say that rabies trends in the United States over the last 80 years show that most infections came before from dog bites. But then in 1960, when wildlife species, especially bats, primarily the source for human infection, they then became the predominant means or vector, I guess, for getting rabies for humans. Used to be the dogs. And now the dogs get shots, I guess, so they don't have the rabies so much. True story, Cyrus. Real quick, I want to tell you the story. So I was speaking in Marion, Iowa, a suburb or a near suburb. I guess it's not a suburb, but it's not far from Dubuque. And after the event was over, we're up in the rectory. It's kind of an old, big rectory. And I'm up there with a couple of priests, and we're having a beer and just enjoying, you know, being done for the day. And all of a sudden, this big bat starts flying around in this room. It's like the, you know, the recreation room in the rectory. And I was terrified because this thing was like it felt to me like it was the size of a seagull. It probably wasn't, but it was just swooping and diving, and I didn't want to get bitten by that thing. So one of the priests, he just very calmly stands up. He goes to the closet. He gets out a tennis racket. And then within a matter of a minute or so, he had hit this bat out of the air. And I don't know what they wound up doing with the bat, but he was no longer flying in that room. And I felt good about that. So keep a tennis racket handy, Cyrus, if you have bats in the area.
And what did he do with the tennis racket?
I think he probably just put it back in the closet. All right. Let's go to Janice in Elk River, Minnesota. Hello, Janice.
Patrick Madrid, I love your show.
Oh, thank you.
I do. You and Cyrus make such a great team. What you don't think of, he does. And you're also going to be here. You're going to be in Elk River on Saturday. I am so excited.
I am too. And it's nice to know that you live there. And I'm trying to, I don't have any of that info in front of me. I'm trying to remember, Elk River, isn't that sort of like northwest of the cities in that direction?
Correct. That's true. Yes, and we are very excited to have you. We can hardly wait. I'm really excited. It's going to be such an honor because, like I said, I listen to you guys like 24/7.
Thank
you. You guys are great.
Well, I look forward to meeting you too.
You have brought so much sunshine to my life. I'm sorry.
No, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was just saying I look forward to meeting you too, Janice.
Yes, and Father Mark, you're going to love him. He's great. Awesome parish.
Wonderful.
So... Be kind, be amazing, be you, and we'll see you on Saturday.
Okay, Janice, thank you very much. You're the welcome wagon. I appreciate it very much. Thank you. Let's go to Rhonda in Dubuque, Iowa. Hi, Rhonda.
Hi. Hey, my question is this. When I get to heaven, will I be able to hug Jesus? And the reason I ask that is because of the social distancing right now, and when you see these pictures of people finally getting to hug their loved ones, I think I will fall at Jesus' feet. I don't have long enough hair to wipe his feet like the woman did in the Bible, mm-hmm. but I know he's physically, you know, you can do it. He's not a spirit. He's got the same capabilities we do. So is that something I will be able to do?
I think so. I mean, hugging is a natural expression of love that people have. It's hard to know. I mean, in Jesus' public ministry, did people hug him? I'm sure his mother hugged him. I'm sure his father hugged him. Did the apostles hug him? It's hard to know whether Jesus had a sort of reserve about him. I think it would be appealing to many people to imagine that Jesus was a hugger, but maybe he wasn't. I don't know. And when we get to heaven, it's hard to really imagine what it will be like there, but we know that Jesus has a glorified body, and when the end of the world comes and we all receive our glorified bodies back, those who are going to heaven anyway, we will experience the joys of heaven in a bodily way. Does that mean food? What does that mean exactly? I'm not sure. So I guess the best way I could put it, Rhonda, is that if this is part of the perfection of heaven, that we can have that kind of embrace with each other, then yes, we will be able to do that. But if that would be unnecessary or superfluous, then maybe no. And here's why I say that. Jesus said that in heaven there will be no marrying or giving in marriage. Now let's pause on this for a minute. So we know that and parents, if you have little kids listening right now, just turn the radio down for 60 seconds. That's all I ask. Just turn it down for 60 seconds because I'm going to talk about a topic that may not be age appropriate for them. Fair warning, ready, steady, go. Jesus said there'll be no marrying and giving in marriage. Now, in marriage, we know that sexual intimacy is a very important part of marriage. It's not the only thing. It's not even necessarily the most important thing, but it is an important thing to be sure. And in heaven, we won't have that. So if you think about the beauty and the pleasure and even the joy that couples experience in that way of, for married people, for enjoying that intimacy with each other, and when you consider how important that is to us and how much people are really focused on it, and then imagine that that will not happen at all in heaven, because what we will experience there in terms of intimacy and love with God will be so far superior to sexual intimacy in this life. So when I consider it through that lens, I think that, you know, maybe hugging will be kind of like that. Maybe it will be superfluous, because whatever we experience in heaven is going to be so much better than hugging. I hope that makes sense. It's an interesting question, and I guess we'll find out when we get there. Let's go. You know what? We have to take another break. Let's take a break. We'll come right back. Do nothing but phone calls until the end of the hour. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/foresters.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Okay, we are back. Let's go to Maria listening in Tampa. Hi, Maria.
Hi. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm trying to... Okay, hi, Patrick.
Hi there.
I just wanted to call and remark on your data about how many times people look at their iPhone.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to share that I recently had a confession. I had a penance where I had to take a day and do a technology fast. And I mean, primarily the phone is what we were talking about.
Uh-huh.
And I just wanted to encourage, it was a great day. I planned ahead. I said, okay, I'm not going to be checking my phone tomorrow. I checked it a few times just because I have kids at school, and I was glad I did because one of my kids got done with practice early, so I had to pick her up. But aside from that, I wasn't looking at, the random text that came in from text chains and all that kind of
right.
stuff. And it was a great day. And so I was encouraged. I just wanted to call and encourage people that if you're looking for something to give up or to try to either offer it up for someone or to just, you know, implement a good practice for yourself, take a day and establish that you're going to do a tech fast and just let your spouse know so that if they need you, they call.
And they don't get worried.
I'm like nervous. I'm running out of breath. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. So let the essential people know. And my husband actually, he had the same one. And so he, you know, he uses his phone all the time for business. So he took a Sunday and he just said, all right, as of this time, I'm not, you know, I'm plugging the entire day. Mm-hmm. And he did. And we both had positive experience. So that was the first thing. The second thing on the same vein is I just wanted to encourage parents with like kids and cell phones. And I know oftentimes I kind of fall back on Patrick Madrid says to wait until your kids are 18. And right now my oldest is 14. She just started high school. And so far she doesn't have a cell phone and she's surviving and she's having a really good experience. And mm-hmm. for all the people who think like it can't be done, like you just can't do it. I mean, so far so good. And we've been close to caving at times and maybe I'll swallow my words and cave next week. I don't know. But that was the other thing I wanted to say is that it can be done. And it's sparked some good conversations. Just yesterday, she was telling me about this multi-grade text chain and someone was calling out some girl for being a hypocrite. And then a lot of people were jumping on and agreeing. And then the girl said she felt really hurt by the people she thought they were her friends. And I, you know, I just kind of looked at my daughter and said, you have to admit, like, this wouldn't be happening if there weren't cell phones, you know, like how hurtful to all the people involved. And it was a great conversation and she hated saying that I was right, but she also knew I was right.
I think this is a good example. What you said is just right. It's, you know, it can be done and it will be difficult for most of us. I'm sure it would be difficult for me to go without my phone for an extended period of time, but it can be done. And I guess maybe the deeper point here is that it should be done from time to time, at least so that you don't become overly dependent upon that technology. Excellent point, Maria. Excellent point. I'm glad you called today. Thank you. Let's go to Kip now in Easton, Pennsylvania. Hello, Kip. Nice to talk to you again.
Hey, Patrick. Nice to talk to you, too. Listen, there were two things that callers called about that I wanted to comment on. First of all, about 2.5 years ago, my brother Pete passed away, and his body was cremated and transferred from where he passed away in Florida to where he was interred in Texas, and they held a mass for him. So the woman who asked about a mass for someone who had been cremated, at least in our situation, a mass was said for his repose.
Thanks for pointing that out. Just real quick, thanks for pointing that out because that was my understanding. That is my understanding that that would not, you know, be a reason to prohibit a mass. So I'm glad that you could confirm that.
No problem. And the other one is a little more in depth. It was the woman who called about the selfishness in her in one of her relations. And I just wanted to offer her an idea that I used in my family that really seemed to work pretty well. Mm-hmm. You know, we know what love is because we have it in Corinthians. Love is patient, love is kind, and all the rest. Mm-hmm. But if you look at it, the opposite of love is selfishness, because selfishness is impatient, it's unkind, and all the rest.
Right.
And so if you look at that as the opposite of love is selfishness, and then when you break down selfishness to selfishness, S-I-N, the opposite of love is sin.
Clever,
And that, for whatever reason, that struck a chord in my family, and so I just offer that as just another idea that might be helpful.
Very wise, Kip, very insightful. As you were saying that, I'm reminded of what St. Thomas Aquinas said. He said, and this is a close paraphrase, he said that inordinate self-love is the root cause of every sin. And he was there speaking, I believe, about pride, which is essentially inordinate self-love. And that fits in nicely with what you just said.
Very good.
Well, thank you. I hope things are going well for you in Easton, Pennsylvania.
Thanks, as always, Patrick. Have a great day.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. We've got now Rhonda in Katy, Texas. Good morning, Rhonda.
Good morning. I have a question about St. Paul, Romans 16, okay. Verse 11.
All right.
It says, greet my kinsman, Herodian. Now, okay. When I tried, somebody posed this question last evening, so I was trying to find out who Herodian was, and there are different versions online. I can't pull out my Josephus right now because my Staghorn Fern's in front of it. So I thought maybe you would be able to supply me the answer.
Well, here's what I can tell you, two things. One is that when you say Josephus, do you mean Flavius Josephus, the Jewish historian?
Correct.
I'm almost certain that he would not be able to provide any information about this at all because he didn't write about St. Paul or about the New Testament. You know, he wrote a little bit about Jesus, but he didn't write about St. Paul. So I'm almost certain, I'm about as certain as I can be without being absolutely certain, that you won't find anything in Josephus. Rather, you'll find commentaries, Catholic commentary on Holy Scripture by Dom Bernard Orchard, that's one source, or some of the other Catholic commentaries that are available. But simply put, we don't know who Herodian was. He says, greet my kinsman Herodian, greet those in the Lord who belong to the family of Narcissus. We don't have certitude as to who some of these people who are mentioned in passing are. Maybe some scripture scholars can link them perhaps with other people, but we're just not told who Herodian was. We can presume that he might have been a cousin or a nephew or somehow related to St. Paul. But beyond that, I don't think we know.
Okay. Because there was some reference online that he was a saint. There's another reference that he was a slave that was freed. And the list goes on and on. So it was like nothing concrete. So I figured maybe you could help.
Well, I hate to disappoint, but I think I have to in this case.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah. If you were to get a commentary by, say, Dr. Scott Hahn or the one that I just mentioned by Dom Bernard Orchard, I could look that up, but I don't have time to do it while the show's going on right now. But those are ways to find out if scholars have found more detail about it. So that'd be my suggestion, Rhonda. Thank you. And it's great that you're reading your Bible. Let's go to Meg in Fulda, Minnesota. Hello, Meg.
Hey, hi, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Quick question for you. I am involved in an ecumenical Bible study, and we're doing the Gospel of Matthew. And the last verse of Matthew 1 talks about St. Joseph and Mary. And I'm totally in line with Catholic teaching on Joseph's amazing devotion to Mary and the idea that they would never have consummated their marriage physically. Right. But the last verse says something that makes me ponder. It says, he had no relations with her until she bore a son and he named him Jesus.
Right.
And I'm just wondering, the implication is that once Jesus was born, they went on and had a typical marriage. Yeah.
Right. And that is a passage that does trips some people up, so don't feel bad about it. This is, you know, at first glance, it certainly seems to suggest that. But in fact, that's not what it's saying. And I can show you how to demonstrate that to your own satisfaction. So the word that's used there, sometimes you see it as heos, H-E-O-S. Sometimes you see it as heos hu. So H-E-O-S, second part of the word would be H-U. But it means until. And they're synonymous. So whichever form you see it in, it means exactly the same thing. And it doesn't mean, as it does in modern 21st century American English, or it doesn't have the connotation necessarily as it does in modern 21st century American English, that that the status of the situation changed after the event in question. So when you and I read that in English and it says he did not know her until she brought forth her firstborn son, the implication is, in modern 21st century American English, that after she had her firstborn son, then this activity took place. But here's how you can demonstrate that it didn't take place. So if you go, for example, to 2 Samuel chapter 6, verse 23. Now, originally this was written in Hebrew, but if you consider the Septuagint Greek version, you see the same construction there, the same haos, as it sometimes haos who in other places. And there we see the story of King David, who was rejoicing when the Ark of the Lord was brought back after being recaptured from the Philistines, who had captured it in battle. And King David was dancing with joy, and his wife, Michal, the daughter of Saul, she was irritated by this because he was a little too, shall we say, exposed to the ladies who were watching, and she didn't like that. So the very end of that passage says that after this had happened, that Michal, the daughter of Saul, had no more children until the day of her death. And that same haos appears there. Now, obviously, she didn't have any children after the day of her death. It's just saying that between the time that this happened and when Michal died, that she and King David did not do what was necessary for a child to be conceived. And so it's just simply making that point. It's not saying that anything happened after that. Another example of that is found in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 25. And this, I think, is another way of really demonstrating from the New Testament that this haos who is not really, it's not really suggesting a change. And this is where it says, "For he," referring to Christ, "he must reign until he has put all his enemies under his feet." And there it is again. Haos. Now, this doesn't mean that after Jesus puts all his enemies under his feet, that he ceases to reign. Obviously, he will reign forever because he's the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. So if you were to do a word study, as I have and others have, what you'll find is that although in some cases the status does change after the word until, but in many cases it does not. So you could say, you know, Grandma didn't take her medicine until she died. Well, she didn't take her medicine after she died. It just means that she didn't take her medicine before she died. So with that in mind, what is being said in Matthew chapter 1 is simply, it's simply asserting the fact that there was no human father involved in the conception of Jesus. And that's all it's saying. It's not extending to anything that took place after that. Now, there's a great deal of biblical information that implicitly shows us that Mary was a perpetual virgin. And unfortunately, I don't have time to unravel that for you just because we have to leave in a minute. But if you call another time, I'd be happy to offer you a fuller explanation of how we can defend Mary's perpetual virginity. But at the very least, we know that this verse does not say that she was not a perpetual virgin. And one other little tidbit for you, Meg. Back in the fourth century, there was a fellow by the name of Helvidius who wrote an article, a tract, asserting that Mary had other children besides Jesus. And the great Saint Jerome, who was a master of Greek and Hebrew and Latin, he went after Helvidius with his own tract, which was written called Against Helvidius. And this is one of the very verses that Helvidius used to try to say that Mary had other children. And Saint Jerome took him apart like a cheap watch. So it's interesting to see that this question has been around an awfully long time. So don't feel like, sure, you know, there's any reason to be concerned about it. Does that help?
That does help a lot. I appreciate the information, and I'll go forth knowing I love the Catholic teaching on Joseph, and it's beautiful. So thank you.
I agree. It is beautiful. Well, you're welcome, Meg, and thank you for calling. It's a nice high note to finish up on, and until we're together again, I'll be praying for you. Please pray for me. God bless you. Cyrus, you were right and I was wrong. La, 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 la.